I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. This week on Africa Update, historic peace talks in northern Uganda, plus a new law in Zimbabwe requires foreign and white-owned companies to hand over control to black Zimbabweans. For more, we've got Amira Wood. She's co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Hi, Amira.
Hey, Farai. Great to be with you.
So, you know, let's talk about Uganda. Steps are underway to end the nearly two decades-long civil war that was in northern Uganda. There are new peace talks between the Ugandan government and the rebel group known as the Lord's Resistance Army, or the LRA. And just last month, the two groups signed a permanent ceasefire, a peace agreement. A final peace agreement is expected to be signed before the end of the month. Is this really the end?
Well, we sure hope so. Let's remember the UN, well over 3 years ago, called the crisis in northern Uganda the worst humanitarian situation in the world. They describe it as worse than Iraq. That was 3 years ago. Clearly, over that time, things have escalated. You have had people forced out of their homes. You have had the continuous abuse of children, with child soldiers being used as a weapon throughout that conflict in northern Uganda. So it is tremendous that we are at the point now of seeing an end at long last to the crisis. I think it's testament to the African Union and the mediation and negotiation efforts that they have put forward to kind of keep all sides to the table. It is also really a testament to the international community. Let's remember, Farai, the International Criminal Court indicted one of the participants in that conflict, Joseph Kony, and that indictment is seen as a key element in bringing us to this point where both sides are negotiating what now looks like a standing peace agreement.
How are these negotiations different from other ones that have taken place in the past? Are there any different stipulations that could keep both sides honest?
Well, I think there are key elements of, you know, disarming various factions, demobilizing soldiers, reconstituting a national army that reuses, really, the factions' fighters and kind of creates a space where those who were former rebel leaders are able to kind of put down their weapons and move forward towards peace. I think what is at issue is really a space where civil society, human rights activists are able to kind of continue their clamorings for peace and are able to keep all sides honest. I think this is what will hold this agreement true. And I think also vigilance by the international community to what extent, and we really don't know, to what extent will the International Criminal Court's response actually detaining or arresting one of the leaders after they may have signed a peace agreement. These are the unknowns now that will determine whether or not this agreement is lasting.
I want to move on to Zimbabwe. The president, Robert Mugabe, just approved a new business ownership law. It requires every white-owned or foreign-owned company to hand over 51%, so controlling interest, in their company to indigenous Zimbabweans. If not, the government said it's going to block any new investments, mergers, or restructuring. So first of all, how is the government defining anyone who's an indigenous Zimbabwean?
Well, they're essentially looking to see who are their supporters 3 weeks before an election. Who are the supporters is a critical element in this discussion around the whole nationalizing and ownership of these assets. So on one level, we can look and say, yes, Zimbabwe is doing what many countries are doing, whether it's Russia or Venezuela, you know, trying to claim a rightful ownership over natural resources. And let's remember, there's diamond, there are tremendous mining opportunities in Zimbabwe, which is, you know, it's critical, I think, that there is resource rights asserted by countries around the world. But given that it is just so close to the election, Farai, it does seem like this is much more to appease those who are supporters of ZANU-PF, the government of Robert Mugabe, to essentially say, well, if you stick with Mugabe, you get even more of the crumbs. And we know the situation in Zimbabwe with, you know, historic high 10,000% inflation rates, with, you know, 80% unemployment, clearly dangling these potential carrots could play a role in the election process.
The devaluation of the currency in Zimbabwe has become a very bitter joke. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, op-ed cartoons and you know, people riffing on how worthless the currency is. Is there still a place for international investment there in the sense that are there still people making money there?
Well, again, let's remember Zimbabwe was once the agricultural breadbasket, and clearly the whole agricultural sector has taken a huge hit in recent years. But there are other sectors that have continued to do well, and I think those are the sectors that will look to these carrots being dangled by Mugabe with interest.
What do we know about the elections? What do we know about these upcoming elections in terms of there's a bit of a three-legged race with the former finance minister, Simba Mokone, and the longtime opposition leader, Morgan Tsvangirai. So how are these candidacies playing out in the current political context?
Well, clearly the political context is incredibly curtailed and constrained. So there is no freedom of the press. There is really no freedom to organize or to assemble. So it's a climate that is repressive still. And with the economic downturns, there's a sense of a real desperate situation throughout the country. So it's not an ideal moment in terms of an election. And let's remember again, there have been issues of changes of the constitution to even get to this point where Mugabe is standing. So it will be a hotly contested electoral process. And I think it's only telling that, you know, one from Mugabe's own party has now, Mokone, Simba Mokone, has now kind of split off and is presenting himself as a candidate as well. So it's going to continue to get murky, I would suspect, as the days and weeks go on before the election takes place.
Let's take a quick look at something going on in another part of the continent, China, of course, not part of Africa, but heavily invested in Sudan, Sudanese oil, Sudan, Darfur, China being criticized by outsiders, Westerners in particular, saying that China needs to pull back either from Sudan or use leverage to get Sudan to up its human rights standards. Now, last month, Steven Spielberg quit as artistic advisor for the Games. Is that kind of an action going to really change? And when I say the Games, I mean the Olympics. Is that kind of action going to change China's policy? Are we seeing any signs that China is beginning to use its leverage to force change in Sudan?
Well, I think you're seeing a change in rhetoric, Farai, and let's be clear. There has been a clamoring of voices, civil society voices in Africa, around the world, but here in the U.S. as well. So Steven Spielberg, it's Mia Farrow, it's a bunch of people who use their own personal acclaim to draw attention to China's role in the Olympics and using the Olympics as an opportunity to bring pressure for changes in terms of the Darfur and international communities. Real pressure on the government of Khartoum to end the genocide and the crisis there in Darfur. So, you know, it's tremendous. As you've seen, this come first from an idea from, you know, professors about a year ago, Eric Reeves and others, professors who thought, well, let's try to see if pressure can be brought to bear on China. And from that time, a year and a half ago to this point, to see that at least in rhetoric, there are some changes. So what you see in this recent trip by China to Darfur is a sense of China trying to do all that, you know, at least publicly, in terms of the photo ops, all that it can. They have brought forward engineers and teams of engineers to help with the African peacekeepers on the ground in Darfur. They have made available Chinese peacekeepers as well. But clearly, China has this critical role to play as a key trading partner and a key interest in Sudan's oil. They have a critical role to play. And these next 5 months before the election are going to be a critical period in which human rights activists that are concerned about Darfur, human rights activists that are concerned about Tibet, and a range of other internal issues in China are going to use this platform of the Olympics to try to raise the level of pressure on China to do what
Amira,
it can.
Thanks so much, Amira.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Amira Woods is co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. She joined us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C.